Hello, welcome to The American Pulse. I'm your host, Tony Rizak. This is a show that seeks to listen, express, and amplify the voice of the American people, no matter where you live in this great nation. We are unabashedly pro-humanity, pro-freedom, and pro-America. Welcome, and let's get started. Hello, listeners, and thank you for tuning in to The American Pulse. One of the big trends I'm seeing in our state and in our great nation is more and more ordinary folks stepping up to run for political positions. And you hear over and over again that the impetus is not ambition. In fact, quite the opposite. Most run because they care for our country and our state and have seen enough corruption and just plain bad results from the entrenched status quo that they feel compelled to do something. And this is true for my guest today. I've been on the periphery of county politics now long enough to see that there's some really good people involved, tireless patriots who genuinely love our country and want to see us thrive. The problem is the system is so corrupted and incentivized to stay corrupt by the deep-pocketed globalist donor class that helped create and sustain this system to start with. It's a circular, self-sustaining model of graft, deception, and compromises. So how do we turn the tides on this? Since we're Americans and most of us do not give up easily, we rely on our faith. In fact, it is only by the grace of God that America will emerge victorious out of the dragon clutches of the Marxist globalists that continue to push us into directions that are not American, to say the least. Let's be honest, it's easy to feel hopeless in times like these. And I don't know about you, but I, for one, am not buying their cynicism and their hopelessness. That is what they want us to feel, and I don't want to let them have that. It's the principle of the thing. Are you following me? There's so much to say about this, and I will continue to unpack this notion in upcoming episodes, both solo episodes and with guests. Let's keep our heads up, you good Americans. I know it probably sounds a bit funny to some of you, but I believe the cavalry is coming. Enjoy the episode. Today's episode is brought to you by The Renton Printery. From huge outdoor banners to small hard hat decals, The Renton Printery produced top quality, customizable, full color decals, business cards, letterhead, envelopes, signs, table tents, and more. The Renton Printery is a small, independent, veteran-owned business since 1957. For all your printing needs, go to www.rentonprintery.com. And now, on to our episode. My guest today is Patrick Peacock. Patrick's family has lived in Washington State since 1887. He holds a master's in business administration and served in the U.S. Army for 23 years as a human intelligence warrant officer and counterintelligence agent, completing two combat tours in Afghanistan and earning the Bronze Star and Combat Action Badge. He is now running for state representative for Legislative District Number 5. Here is my interview with Patrick Peacock. All right, I am here with Patrick Peacock, father, military veteran, and state rep candidate in LD5 right here in Washington State. Patrick Peacock. Patrick, welcome to the American Pulse. It is great to have you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, you know, you and I really hit it off. We both have served on the KCGOP executive board and just had a number of great interactions. I actually saw you playing guitar for the first time at the Patriots of Liberty event, and I was just floored, man. That was awesome. I really enjoyed that. It showed a different side of you, a real artsy side, an artistic side, and talented side, by the way. But before we really get going, maybe you can let the listeners know just a bit of your background, where you're from, where you grew up, how long you served in the military, maybe in what capacity, and family, and where you live now, and anything else you think might be relevant today.
Yeah, talk about myself. It's kind of my least favorite thing to do. Yeah. Whenever we do appearances, I always like bring a little sheet so somebody else can give that background information so I don't have to talk about myself. One of the things to understand about me is I'm a native of Washingtonian in a big way. So LD5, for the people that don't know, runs in the very eastern part of Keene County from Issaquah to Enumclaw, to include Maple Valley, Hobart, and Black Diamond. So in 1886 or so, you know, we came across, my great-great-grandfather came across Canada, actually, from England and dropped down. And so we've seen a lot of iterations in this area. We have a little family farm. Originally bought it from the railroad in, you know, late 1800s, before it was a state, actually. And it was all logging back then. And then for a while it was, you know, a railroad stop from Taylor. That Taylor is the town that supplied Seattle all the ceramics to rebuild it after the fire. And then my grandfather made it in a dairy for a while, and then it was a beef farm for a while. And then, you know, late high school, well, just after in college years for me, they finally, the ordinances that King County was implementing caused us to stop it as a working farm, just create it as an open space. So I only bring that up just because, I mean, it doesn't matter if you've been in the area for, you know, 6 months or 100 years. I mean, you know, you deserve good government. You deserve government that serves you. But at the same time, I have a lot of history. I understand the evolution. And given some of the backgrounds, I have a tendency to look at first principles. You know, a lot of the ordinances and stuff that King County's doing, you know, my father fought. You know, that's why we ended up not being a farmer anymore, because of the just the silly, you know, you'd have to put your cat on a leash, you know, type of thing for our barn cats. Sure. And then a lot of the land use issues that, you know, I mean, if they worked, I would be more for them, but most of them just was some academic that with no practical experience on land, you know, trying to tell us what to do. So that's kind of an important understanding. And we still live on the farm, the whole family. We have a little multi-resident little place here that we all live on. Well, let's start with education. Education, actually, as an undergrad, I started off in the Green River Music Company, for those that remember the Green River Music Company, back when it was a community college, and then transferred to UW and ended up studying philosophy. And the aspect of philosophy I studied was epistemology, which is a big dime, you know, cent word, for the study of knowledge. And that really, if you want to understand where I'm coming from with issues and subjects, you got to understand that, you know, I studied knowledge, how to acquire it. When can you say you know something? I have a tendency to peel the onion way back to first principles before I rebuild it up, kind of in a Descartes, you know, rationalism type of way. And then I went the military and ended up getting practical and got a MBA with a financial emphasis, which is kind of the equivalency to a master's in finance. So we got a little bit practical there. Military-wise, I went in kind of late. I was in my 30s after 9/11. I was single at the time, and that was the kind of heard, you know, we were attacked, and I thought I wanted to do my part. So ended up in the military for 23 years. I'm technically still in. I have dropped my retirement package, but I still have to go drill. Start off as a counterintelligence agent and worked in with a special forces group, the Green Berets, as a CI counterintelligence human support person. So all my experiences with the Green Berets, with unconventional warfare and foreign internal defense, mostly in Afghanistan. And then I became a warrant officer, human intelligence warrant officer, and that's where I'm at now. I'm a CW3. Not a lot of people kind of know what warrant officers are. About 25% of us in the Army are helicopter pilots, and the rest are technicians. So we're commissioned officers that are subject matter experts in specific fields. And in my case, it's a human intelligence. After anything?
That's really great. That's really great. You know, my first question really is, first of all, thank you for running. It takes a heck of a lot of courage to run for office in a blue state. You know, I know a lot of really good conservatives that they're beat down. They're like, both parties are, you know, it doesn't matter. My vote doesn't matter. And I mean, there is a ton of good. We've talked about this. I've talked about this on both of my podcasts, actually. There's a ton of really proud, good Americans, conservatives, centrists, even good, you know, good Democrats. I know there is some, you know, but they're sitting on the sidelines. They don't want to be involved. And it takes something to run, knowing that, you know, the likelihood of winning sometimes for a conservative in Washington or Oregon is not real good. What had you step up? You gave a little bit of your background that you've got this whole family history. Your dad kind of fought big government. And what was it that had you say, I'm going to run again? You know, what was the impetus for that? I hear a bunch of different kinds of answers. I was just curious as to what was the reason for you.
Well, there's two answers to that. Okay. The simple answer is for evil to prevail, you know, is for good men to do nothing. And if you have the skill set and if you have the ability to do something about it, you know, I don't know how Spider-Man says, when the bad things happen and you didn't do anything about it, it's on you too. Yeah. The longer answer is I got, you know, after COVID, I was recently back from a, I did a contract get over Afghanistan, and I was recently back, and it was a little, you know, I was in a position where I could take some time back and make sure my son was staying up on his education and all that. And I started seeing what they were being taught. So I was like, what's going on here? I mean, you know, it was a little deeper dive. It was like, you know, every reading, you know, you had a reading assignment, right? And then you look and see what the reading assignment was. And the assignment is to, you know, do an analysis paper, but the subject matter was at the discretion of the teacher. And so I was kind of like, okay, I need to take a look at this. So I spent really about almost 2 years going to school board meetings. And I wasn't, you know, being an intelligence professional, I mean, I wasn't just going to jump in and start yelling and screaming and pounding the table. I kind of wanted to understand how it worked. How do we get here? What are the levers? What can you do as a parent? You know, and I learned really quickly that there's a methodology to dealing with parents. You know, they come in, they complain about whatever they're really passionate about, and the school boards will make them sound like they're being heard, and they burn out, you know, and they just continue on. So what, and I mean, I never thought I'd run for office. I mean, I know you hear that a lot, but I mean, I was a human intelligence guy, man. I was training to run source operations and interrogations. You know, the idea of being a public figure was the last thing on my mind. So, the school board director in my area, resigned. It was really interesting to find out why she resigned afterwards. She couldn't really say it, but it had to do with how the board was handling a sexual harassment or a sexual abuse case. And I kind of looked around and realized, geez, I've been to more of these, you know, work groups and meetings, you know, for like a couple of years now. I probably am as qualified or up to speed as, you know, any of the actual directors. And, but, and I was, you know, as a warrant officer, what we do is we write policies and procedures, and that's what we do. We're subject matter experts, and commanders can't be subject matter experts in everything. So we write the SOP, and we kind of tell everybody how to do it to accomplish the mission within our thing. And I taught at the schoolhouse for a number of years. I went down and I taught at the Army Intelligence Schoolhouse down at Fort Huachuca for several years. So I was familiar with teaching, at least on that level, you know, lesson plans, and ours was, you know, accreditation type things. Anyway, so I was pretty familiar. I just kind of looked around and said, geez, I'm probably more qualified to do this than any of the other candidates that are getting appointed. So that was kind of one of those, you get that dilemma now. It's like, well, how can I ask somebody else to do it if I'm not willing to do it myself?
Right.
So that was how I ended up, and they didn't like me because I was, you know, I was also videotaping their school board meetings and posting it online, and I was the transparency guy. And so they were concerned about having me on the board. And so that was kind of the impetus. And then the LD5, the Republicans, asked me the following year if I would run for the, you know, state, oh, actually the Senate race at that time, but that's its own story. And so that was, and I was like, yeah, you know, I just ran for school board or what, you know, but like you said, they can't, it's really difficult to find people that will run. And so they're like, yeah, but if you've ran for something, you understand what the PDC filing is, you know? And so I ended up running in 2024. I ended up, you know, running actually for a state, the same position I'm running for now. But yeah, that's kind of how it happened. And it just kind of, again, there's a also responsible, not just running. I mean, you and I have kind of been through that with the executive board. It's like, you know, just because somebody decides to run and puts an R behind the name doesn't necessarily make them qualified. You know, it's a two-step. We need to find, you know, one, people that will adhere to Republican values and also are confident, you know, in the position. So,
you know, I've heard people talking about, you know, the GOP sort of winning incrementally right now. And it reminded me that former gubernatorial candidate Dino Rossi, I was listening to him last summer at a fundraiser, and he gave a little talk, and he just reminded everybody there, he's like, you know, you guys, you think that everything's set in stone, that it's always going to be really blue. And he goes, but things shift around. This used to be a really red area, and all the Democrats were the blue collar guys on the east side of the state. And and so he goes, you know, it'll shift and change. And if you put good principled people and just stay with it. He goes, it might take 10 or 15 years. And I think that might have taken the sails out of some of the people there. Like, oh my God, how old am I going to be in 10 feet? You know, and it's like, I think, you know, good Americans are optimistic by nature. I think we want to do our share. We're optimistic. We want to have the nation better next generation than it is now. We want our state to be better for our children and grandchildren, but it's, you can't just snap a finger and slam dunk the Democrat Party that has been so entrenched that, and even many in the Republican Party entrenched in the status quo, entrenched in politics as usual, and including, you know, lifelong politicians that are in. And it's like, we need fresh leadership, but it's going to take a while to have that happen. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Does winning incrementally, is that fine with you? Do you see the common sense about it? But also, how do we stay patient, knowing that maybe some of what we're doing in the next year, 2, 3, 4 years might be a stepping stone to bigger victories maybe a decade from now?
Wow, where to unpack that? I don't disagree with Dino. I mean, Dino's great. I mean, I love Dino, so I don't want to take this as any sort of criticism.
Yeah.
One of the in larger picture, and you know, I'll be honest with you. I mean, my background's in conventional warfare, you know, foreign antenna defense. Mm-hmm. So maybe I just view the world through those lenses, but I think it's very relevant right now. You said something like business is politics as usual, and there are cycles and it'll come around. And I don't agree with that. You know, I mean, there is the Battlestar Galactica, this is all happened before it'll happen again type of philosophy. So things do change and they come around given enough time. But the politics as usual thing, I think, has been probably our biggest mistake as a Republican Party in a couple of decades. It's not politics as usual. And I'll start with this. I mean, I want to be fair because, I mean, I there's a lot of in-party infighting, and I think there needs to be, there's a lot of personal grudges and shock of all shocks, Tony, the mainstream Republicans actually endorsed me this year.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, wow, let me sit down here. Maybe, you know, maybe people are coming around and seeing, you know, it is a different era. But if you look at the history of the political parties, just to kind of back up a little bit, you know, there was an established kind of six eras of political parties, and we're in the sixth, and we have now firmly entered a seventh. And it's amongst political academics and stuff that kind of see it, whereas we don't really have the traditional Republicans and Democrats that we had even 10 years ago. Or, you know, certainly not 20 years ago. And that's kind of, that was the era Dino kind of comes from, and a lot of the party leadership being older guys. So a lot of the strategies and a lot of the things that they suggest that this is the way to win, or this is the way to do it, are based off of presuppositions that I don't think are true anymore.
Mm.
So the new era is, I mean, you're seeing the Democratic Party more than us right now with the whole Democratic Socialists of America. You know, they're taking over that party, and they thought it was politics as usual, and they were using the big tent, Saul Alinsky type of techniques, and all of a sudden they're finding, you know, they're losing in the primaries to straight up socialists. And they admit they don't like the party, but it's easier to take over that party than it is to start a new one, which is similar to what Trump did. I mean, Banner is quite quite upfront about the fact that, you know, the options were either start a third party or take over a party, and they decided to try and take over the Republican Party.
And I'm going to interrupt you just for a second. Yeah. I wanted to get your thoughts on something, because my sense is the traditional Kennedy liberals, they're jettisoned, man, because I think
the Republicans.
Yeah, they are, and they don't realize it yet because they've been trained to hate Donald Trump and everything he stands for. So they're like, I can't go over to the GOP because I've got Trump derangement syndrome still, but I don't agree with anything coming out of the radical left that's taken over my party. So I really feel for them. I used to be one of them back in the day, you know? Absolutely, and so it was common sense back then, but now it's like, wait, I think there's a whole big part of Washington and King County that doesn't feel like they have representation, and they're afraid to really look at the GOP as an option because
they don't want to leave the tribe.
They don't. Exactly. So I just wanted to put that in there, but go ahead.
Yeah. No, I totally agree with that. You and I would be considered Blue Dog Democrats or Kennedy Democrats in another era. Now we're like ultra American first MAGA crazy fascists. And I'm like, no, I'm like, I have a lot more common with Kennedy than I do with, you know, with Hitler. But anyway, where I was going with that is, you know, in the Black Lives Matter movement, the leaders, you know, they cop to being Marxist trained operatives. Now, to the average person, and this is totally unacceptable because they don't have the background I do. And again, maybe I'm just seeing it through a lens. That doesn't mean that they're Marxist to me. Okay. That doesn't mean that they're socialist necessarily. They probably are, but they're not. The training that they received was not in the philosophy. It was in the tactics and techniques of Marxist takeovers.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't caught up to that yet. And the Democrats haven't caught up to that yet. And so when we're going out there, the traditional, you know, I call it like viewing every election as its own little election and every candidate running their own campaign. And, you know, it's one ballot, you know, now I'm a down ballot. I'm the last guy on the ticket. Right. So if you haven't decided to vote for everybody above me, then, you know, how much can I do to influence, you know, somebody opening up that ticket? Maybe if you're going to open up the ballot and, you know, there's a couple of percentages I can do, but the point being is there's a holistic approach to this that they're not seeing. And they're using methodologies and they're using mindsets and tactics and methodologies that worked maybe 10, 20 years ago, but are not going to work. And the proof is in the pudding is we're getting our butts kicked.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, are they willing to, you know, I'm sorry. I mean, I was pointing back to Chad. Chad Mongandaw is a good friend of mine and I've learned a lot from him. But he's ran in my LD5, he's ran more than anybody in the last 15 years, 15 to 20 years, and he's had the most success than anybody in the last 15, 20 years. But in 2024, when he ran for Senate, he spent, you know, $57,000. He got very little support and he got like 48%, got the highest vote of any person, number of votes in King County, and, you know, came pretty close. 1 year later, his opponent, Bill Ramos, dies of a heart attack, so they have to have a special election. And he spends, according to the PDC, some like $375,000 himself, and the party and other efforts spend another probably easy $100,000. And there's half the number of votes, and he loses 5%. And he ran a very traditional Prometheus-inspired, old-school guard, you know, type of campaign. And there just wasn't an issue on the ballot that got out the vote. And so I'm like, we've got to reevaluate that we are not really in a party, you know, party cycle type of situation where you have 40% here, 40% there, and you're fighting over the 20%. We are really, you know, we have zero power. I mean, we they've held the governorship for 40 years, two generations. It's two generations of governors putting judges in. And we have to start thinking more as an insurgency. Now, I'm not saying insurgency as in, you know, take up arms, you know, the last thing to it. That's the, you know, in both the fourth and fifth generation warfare, that's the very last thing that hopefully you don't get to. But we need to have that mindset of more of an insurgency and not as a politics of usual, running campaigns as usual. And, you know, we need some new ideas. And that's kind of where a lot of the, you know, the guys that have had some success in the past that they keep going back to, they go back to what worked for them, you know, 20 years ago, and it's just not working anymore.
That makes sense to me, Patrick. I'm glad that you expressed that. You know, I recently interviewed Micah Villa with Patriots of Liberty. I know you're endorsed by them. I wanted to ask you, you're a decorated military veteran. And everything you're saying is kind of through that lens a little bit. Like, you know, and I guess wanted to ask you, like, what did serving in the military, how did that kind of give you, you know, the qualifications, like, what does it bring? I mean, I'm already hearing it in the way that you're describing tactics and stuff like that, but I just wanted to give you a chance to speak of why I think we should be looking for military veterans across the board to serve. I just think it would be, I think the state would be better served by a bunch of veterans rather than the people, a lot of the people that are serving right now. But that's my take on it. Mainly it's because it's coming from my desire for maybe quicker change than incremental change at Dino Rossi's. I'm like, let's put a whole bunch of veterans in there that have taken constitutional oaths. And that would be so much better. But can we get military veterans to run all over the place. Is that a possibility? Do you think that's something that's achievable? I guess I gave you a lot to push back on or, you know, express there, but just give you a chance to talk about military candidates, I guess, is one way to ask you.
No, I think it's the most right pool of people to recruit from. We were at war for 20 years, GWAT. That was the era I was in. I mean, more than any other war, we were at war longer than anybody else. And you're talking about a set of peoples whose motivation is they signed up. And, you know, a lot of people have different reasons for signing up. For the most part, though, there is an ingrained, you are literally putting your life on the line, if not actually, like some of us, but you're the opportunity cost is, you know, living a civilian life, you know. And so you're giving up your, you know, your time to serve, if nothing else. So those guys have a really, and they're very loyal to the U.S. I mean, that's one of the problems we're seeing, well, just right now with the Postal Service thing is we've got a judge that was a foreign-born judge that doesn't really have any allegiance to this country, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's a problem. There's a reason why you're supposed to be naturally born.
Yep.
And so the motivations that, you know, there's some questionable motivations out there with people that are in government, whether or not they really believe in the United States and the veteran community. I mean, yeah, we went out and a lot of us, you know, came back with combat action badges and, you know, you don't make that level of commitment without caring about your country. And so rather than being motivated for power or influence or prestige or personal enrichment or, you know, any of those type of things, your veterans are much more likely, not, you know, it's generalization, mm-hmm. are much more likely to have motivations of really caring about the country. And veterans are taught about leadership. It's, you know, I got a master's degree, dual master's degree. And I can tell you, you know, in all my years of formal education, there was not one class on leadership. And, you know, every NCO sergeant up to certainly in the officer's corps, you know, we're given leadership classes. And they're also, you know, op orders and all that type of stuff of how to accomplish a mission. So, mm-hmm. you know, so if be a relevant example, look at the climate in the United States. I'm like, okay, well, I'll buy in just for the sake of argument that we're trying to save the environment. Okay, what is saving the environment look like? What are the conditions where we can say we've saved the environment? Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, what is the, you know, Sergeant Major loves sugar cookies and an acronym to get us there. And so when you see things, I mean, I could tell you right now with like a fraction, I mean, like a hundredth of a percentage of the money they're spending, I could reduce your carbon just with carbon traps and tree planting, you know, compared to what they're doing. So if you're gonna charge people, you know, up to $30 per gallon of gas and say it's for the environment, well, you better produce some results. And so your average veteran is gonna look at it and says, listen, you're not accomplishing the mission that your stated mission. Yeah. You know. So what is it you're trying to accomplish in the first place? So that's why, you know, I go back to we were at war for 20 years. So and there's a lot of person that served in the GWAT and the GWAT was inherently kind of an unconventional warfare environment, asymmetric is what they call it. So yeah, no, there's a lot of veterans out there that are just absolutely, absolutely a good stock to go after as far as running for office.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, I can hear the strategy and tactics both side by side as you talk about different things, you know, loving the country you serve. What a concept. Talk about a first principle. When I get asked by liberals, I don't get asked very much, but I have been asked this a few times. They're like, why do you like Donald Trump so much? I could give him a big list of things, but the first thing I always say is he loves this country.
Yeah.
He loves the country and he represents America well in that he tries his best to do right by our nation in all things. And you know, all they get hung up on is his tweets and stuff. And I try to tell him, look, they don't ever see the sense of humor. He likes poking the bear. I go, you know, did you hear when he said, you know, happy 250th birthday, America, even all you haters and losers. I go, that drove the Kennedy liberals crazy. Like, God damn, he is such a, and I'm like, he's kidding you. Cause you get so triggered. It's so fun for him just to poke fun at you because you won't lighten up, you know? And
I get some press and it gets It's free press. It gets them in the news.
I know. It's unreal. So anyways, that's a whole nother issue. But the other thing I want, before we finish it up and stuff, and I'll give you a chance to tell people where they can find you and support you. Dude, your band Rock Tide. I was at the Patriots of Liberty, and you guys, I didn't even know you played guitar. And here you are. You guys were tight, man. That was a lot of good music. And I just wanted to share that how long have you played guitar for? How long have you been in Rock Tide? Do you guys do any originals or is it all covers? The covers were tight. The covers were tight, dude. It was awesome. So yeah.
It's a lot of fun, like catching you guys off guard, and a lot of especially the Patriot of Liberty, because that was kind of funny because we were booked for that show before I even ran it as a candidate. Before I even knew I was going to be a candidate. And then Ted, the bass player who's running in the 47th, we brought him back too. So I started playing guitar. Well, yeah, it's funny because a lot of these people that know me is the guy that wears the blue blazer and the white shirt and you know, the only guy that's wearing a tie because, you know, I think, oh, you need to look like you can handle responsibility. And then you show up and I'm up there and, you know, looking like Sammy Hagar. He's like, yeah, no, this is the real Patrick. I started playing when I was about 14, you know, I'm 57. That's awesome. So I mean, I had a number of years, you know, the military years where, you know, it was acoustical guitar. I didn't play much. And, I did, like I said, in 16, I don't know if your audience would know, there's a group called the Continental Singers, so the Christian, non-denominational Christian group I toured with. And then out of high school, I went to the Green River Music Company. And so, I was really, until I was about 27, we had a recording studio in Georgetown before Pro Tools.
Nice.
And that was a large part of my life before, you know, I kind of had to get practical and went into computers for a while and then ended up in the military. And so, when I got back, Ted, actually the bass player, they were looking for a rhythm guitarist, you know, somebody to come back in. And this was like 5 years ago. And so it was interesting. Yeah. So I wasn't really ready for prime time, but kind of schmoozed my way and played well enough to get in the band and I've had 5 years to kind of get back to where I used to be.
You guys,
it's a lot of fun.
You know what I love about it is I think there's a lot of the people in politics, and God bless them for being sleeves rolled up and being, but it can be so serious. You know, it's a spiritual, we know it's a spiritual war. We know we've been getting our butts kicked. We know, you know, all these different things, and it can have this air of just super serious. Like everything's just like, you know, white knuckle. So that you play in a band and it's like, I think we can kind of forget to have a good time and lighten up a little bit. Like it doesn't help. God doesn't want us to be just ridiculously serious all the time. Like life is meant to be, even in times of trouble, life's meant to be enjoyed. Like you have to have the sweet things in life. And so I wanted to touch base on that because the music thing is just really near and dear to me. I just love it, but we got to get this horse in the barn, man. I wanted to give you a chance. Where can people go and find out more about you? And also click donate and support your run. You're running for state rep in LD5 position 2. There's a bunch of great information. So where's the website and how do you want people to support you? And any final thoughts before we sign it off today?
Just to start, it's electpeacock.org is my website. There's a couple of places that don't. We've actually recently set up, we Prologue Digital, nice Doug Vassar's group, put together a really nice 30-second clip we're trying to get on the air. And so you can go into that and you can see that clip. And there's a little, you know, there's the antidote, you know, donations there too. And it kind of tells you, like, you know, this donation will buy this much airtime. And it kind of breaks it down for people. We've got enough signs. We've got enough, you know, we're okay on all that. I purposely don't hire staff because that's, you know, when you get into big money, that's really where the money goes, is into wages. And so we've kept those costs down. So pretty much we're going with the digital ad and just message signs. I really feel we need an issue that drives the ballot. Our biggest struggle right now is to getting people to vote. If we could get an LD5, it's very purple. If we could just simply get, you know, inspire people to vote, then they'll vote for me and Michelle. And we've got some really good candidates. Michelle's very quality, city of Maple Valley, chief police for like 12 years and just really knows her stuff. So we've got some good candidates for you, but we got to get you to actually go find the ballot in the mail and fill it out. So the Let's Go Washington guys with the income tax initiative being on the ballot is, I think, what's going to drive the voters and people to turn out to vote. And that's really what that ad is about. It's like, yeah, you signed the petition. So, you know, let's finish the job and take out the people that actually put the law in place in the first place. It doesn't really, you know, it doesn't really do any good to you know, give them an F on their homework and then, you know, ask them to do it again. So, So there's a page there. You can actually see the ad that we're trying to run if you want to donate and what all the donation levels will buy as far as digital ad.
Love it. Love it. Patrick, thank you so much for taking time today, coming on to the American Pulse. So appreciate your insight, your wisdom, and sharing all that with us today. Good luck. We are supporting you. We're with you all the way. And thanks again. And let's keep in touch.
Yeah, we'll do. We'll see you soon. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Well, if you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did, Patrick represents exactly what we the people are looking for in our representation, a qualified leader who genuinely cares about Washington. That's it for today, my good Americans. Come find us next time on the American Pulse.